Cape Talk. Call Pippa now on 021-446-0567.
Well, my next guest has spent a great deal more than 6 weeks on photography. I can tell you that much. A few months ago, you may recall, I spoke to science writer Leonie Jabert about getting published in National Geographic for the first time. And she mentioned during that interview that her piece on the Kalahari would never have made it to print without the magnificent work of photographer Thomas Peshak to accompany her beautiful words. Now, Thomas is probably best known for his famous photograph of the great white shark trailing behind a kayak off the South African coast. Line. It's an image that has been used in memes and in fake news posts ever since. But it's just one of hundreds of thousands of staggering wildlife photographs which he has taken over the course of his career. And what he's done now is put together a collection of around about 200 or so of his personal favorite images and released them in a gorgeous new hardcover book called Wild Seas. It is a great pleasure to have him with us on the show to talk about the book and to talk about the remarkable career which has given rise to it. Thomas, welcome to the show.
I said, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. And yourself?
Lovely, lovely. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
It's a great pleasure. I mean, clearly you've had a lifelong love of the sea and its creatures, Thomas. You can tell that from the way you look at them through the lens. Where did that all begin? Tell us a little bit about the roots of your relationship with the ocean.
The first time I went underwater, I think I was probably around 10 years old, and I can still remember it was just like entering this alien, magnificent world. It was like almost journeying into outer space and seeing this different planet, and almost instantly, I was utterly hooked. I literally fell in love then and there, and from age 10 onwards, I kind of knew already back then that I was going to devote, you know, my life to the ocean. Mm-hmm. Originally, I thought I was going to be a scientist, a marine biologist, and then I ended up, you know, over a long and convoluted route as a National Geographic photographer. So it's been an early and a long love of anything to do with the marine realm.
The marine biology career, I mean, you got really far. You were actually studying for your PhD when a particular moment and a particular encounter, Thomas, shifted your perspective and made you realize there might be a different way of making the kind of impact I want to. And it revolves around abalone poaching. Tell us what happened.
Indeed. My doctorate was on the impact of the palamon, on the abalone poaching on the South African coast. And I was mainly working sort of in that area between Cape Hunklip and Hasbai. And I was basically watching an abalone Armageddon unfold in front of my very eyes. As I was researching these areas, I was watching abalone populations become decimated, you know, day after day after day. You know, my research animals were being poached on a weekly basis. And, you know, my statistics and my scientific reports and the presentation I was giving, you know, weren't having any real impact. Nobody actually really cared about the fate of the abalone and the fate of the kelp forest at that moment in time. And, you know, I was always making images underwater. You know, underwater photography was always part of my sort of makeup, but never did I want to be a photographer. I was using those underwater images to illustrate my scientific publications, and I was using them in conference presentations, and I just got so utterly frustrated that people did not care about my statistics and my science that I began to publish these images you know, in popular media. And I began incredibly humbly with these small regional newspapers, you know, maybe a readership of 100 people. I mean, average age of reader, probably 80 years old. And then it became the Cape Argus and the Cape Times. And I think it was Getaway and Vech. And then the international publications came knocking on the door. And in a matter of 6 months, I had been able to tell the same story I've been trying to tell scientifically about how we were losing this precious abalone resource, you know, in popular media. And all of a sudden, you know, people were getting it, you know. Yeah. All of a sudden, I felt like, okay, now we understand. And in a matter of 6 months, you know, we were able to reduce the poaching in the marine reserves I was working in by up to 80 to 90%. Wow. Largely inspired by a few photographs and a few personal stories. And that was really, Pippa, one of my sort of biggest aha moments where I thought, you know what? You know, I went into marine biology because I wanted to make a difference in conservation. And for me, it was this wake up and thing, maybe I can have an even greater impact using, you know, a more popular language, using photography and using storytelling to actually, you know, tell those same stories in a much more appealing and a much, much more, you know, accessible way. Mm. And that was the first aha moment, but it took, years and years and years of having one foot in each camp. You know, I remember, you know, after a while going in the water with my, you know, my underwater slate and my scientific equipment and my calipers, you know, really wanting to go and measure abalone and measure the impact. But I also had a camera with me. Mm-hmm. And within 10, 15 minutes, I had lost the slate and forgotten all about measuring abalone. I was photographing octopus and fur seals and things like that. So, you know, slowly, the photography just became my main passion. And then, you know, after a while, I simply couldn't have a, you know, have a foot in both camps. And that's when I made the really tough decision to sort of, you know, walk away from a science career to embrace the, you know, the day-to-day life of a nomadic photojournalist. And that was, geez, that was getting on 15 years ago now, almost.
And I'm glad you mentioned the nomadic sort of lifestyle. I mean, it's a tough life, Thomas. You spend, I gather, something like 250 days of the year on the road, away yep. from home, if you even have such a thing as a permanent home base. I don't know. It must be a quite lonely life in many respects, though. I mean, what's the sort of personal toll that this lifestyle has on you?
Look, you know, the for almost 15 years, I've been on the road at least 200 to 300 days a year. That is correct. And I think if I wasn't so passionate, I mean, unless you are madly and utterly in love with what you do, unless you are really obsessed with the process and you really believe that the work is making a difference, nobody would put themselves through that.
Yeah.
You know, the making the picture and having this incredible interaction with a marine creature. I mean, those are probably less than 5% of what I spent my time on. Most of my energy spent logistics and trying to survive and trying to make photographs happen and bashing my head against brick walls and things like that. So it's no, absolutely. It's the passion that drives you. And luckily our memories largely, you know, they emphasize the good and the positive experience. Look, you know, it's there's a trade-off. You know, people see that 5% of the, you know, the highlights reel per se. And people see the photographs that actually work. They see these, you know, this very, very tiny percent of images where I've actually pulled it off. What they don't see is hundreds of thousands of images where I've failed miserably. And you know, and in many ways, you know, especially my work for National Geographic, which has sort of been my main career for the last 12, 13 years of that, we are looking to make iconic images that have never been made before. We're trying to show the world situations and species and ecosystems that they simply haven't experienced. So, you know, there are times when I will work on a single image for 2, 3, 4 weeks, sometimes even months. And most of the days I am failing miserably at making that image. But little by little by little, you're learning. You're just kind of working that image. You're trying to make it happen. And then, you know, if you've done all your homework, if you're in the right situation, if you have, you know, there's always a bit of luck. And hopefully at the end of it, you walk away with this one image. And for a story, you know, you need 15, 20 images, which is why I'm in the field so much, because, you know, that is the only time in the field is the most precious luxury a photographer can have, especially in the natural history and conservation realm. So time in the field is just, that's where it's at. And the downsides are something one just has to weigh up against the, you know, the ability to do, you know, what one loves and to do work that, you know, can and does make a measurable difference.
Just for those who might have joined us late to the conversation, I'm talking to photographer Thomas Peshak, who has just released a book called Wild Seas, a collection of roughly 200 of his favorite images from 20-odd years of outstanding photographic work. Thomas, we have to talk about the famous shark photograph taken, I know, a long, long time ago, all the way back in 2003. I'm sure listeners can instantly picture the image of the kayak with a very large great white trailing behind it. Thomas, I mean, the story of how that picture was picked up and repurposed, shall we say, is quite a funny one. Won't you tell us what actually happened?
A shark kayak image is both a blessing and a curse. And it's a blessing because it was the image that kind of put me on the map internationally and kind of gave me a lot of opportunities. And the curse is that even now, you know, 20 plus years later, that is still very often the first thing people ask about. Look, and that was a point, I mean, 2000, and in the early 2000s, you know, considered largely these mindless killers, the whole awakening and the whole sort of realization that sharks are not these, you know, dangerous creatures hadn't really happened at that point. And At that stage, I was working on a book about great white sharks in South Africa, and a lot of the images I was seeing were just these same cliche images with open mouths and big triangular teeth and these really aggressive and almost, you know, violent images that after months at sea working with great white sharks were simply not the reality that I was seeing. I was seeing a much more cautious, a much more confident, a much more majestic animal that, while of course an apex predator, I mean, this is a species we have to respect, but at the end of the day, I just wanted to make images that were different and that perhaps told a different side, you know, to that story. And I was working with, you know, researchers from the White Shark Trust who were based out of Hans Bay, and a friend and colleague of mine, Michael Scholl, who was heading up the trust at the time. He had, you know, come across these large aggregations of great white sharks in very, very shallow water. I mean, literally in 2 meters of water, you know, just a few tens of meters off some of the beaches there. And people were naturally nervous and trying to figure out what all these white sharks doing there. And Michael wanted to find that out. And I was tagging along with him. I was making images of the research work. And they were trying to track these white sharks across this bay in their research boat. And the biggest issue, Pippa, was that these sharks were either attracted to the engines, which means they altered the natural behavior to actually follow the boat, or they were afraid and they were scared of the engines and they pretty much moved away from the boat. He was never able to actually observe natural behavior. And then I had this great idea, which of course I regretted instantly, was, hey, why don't we use sea kayaks to track great white sharks? Which now just even saying it out loud makes me recoil. But at the end of the day, at that moment, that felt like a completely, you know, reasonable thing. And, you know, since it was my dumb idea, I got to try it out first. I was the first, you know, guinea pig in the kayak. And, you know, and the sharks ignored us. They were very, you know, they were not aggressive. They weren't overly curious. And in a matter of a few days, we worked out this methodology where the scientist was able to sit in the kayak with the GPS, and they were able to, at a distance, track these white sharks across the bay. And that's when, you know, the scientist in me switched into photographer, and I'm thinking, okay, here's this incredible, you know, opportunity to make this image of this researcher in a kayak tracking this white shark across this beautiful bay at the tip of Southern Africa. And so, you know, I tied myself into the tower of the research boat, and we were just drifting along, and one of the researchers was in the kayak, and I was making all these images of these white sharks just, you know, coming up behind the kayak and then just moving off again. And as powerful as the images were, they just weren't quite doing it for me. And then I was up on the tower, and this one shark was just, you know, this one shark just kind of came up right up from the bottom, you know, almost in sort of, you know, lifting up, and the dorsal fin breaks the surface. And, you know, as I'm about to make the photo, and remember, this is still in the days of slide film. You know, you have 36 images, no digital, so I was down to the last few rolls of film. And I'm just waiting and waiting and something, and I hesitate. And as I hesitate, the scientist in the kayak looks around. He almost makes eye contact with the shark. And then I make the last three images. And there's this, you know, and of course, on film, I didn't know what I got. Wow. And then about a couple of weeks later, I look at this picture on the slide table, and it's just this, and it just has this sort of, you know, iconic nature to it. Wasn't what I originally wanted. Originally, I wanted the scientist tracking the shark, and this picture shows the shark tracking the scientist. But, you know, as I learned later on, it was a much, much more powerful scene. And it's really, I think, you know, instigated and triggered a lot of interesting conversations about white sharks. And yeah, so that's the image that I don't think I will ever be able to forget about, because people will ask me about it forever and ever. I have a sneaking suspicion.
Of course. And of course, people keep imposing that into other settings to make very funny fake news stories for another day, though. Thomas, before you go, I've got to say, I mean, that is an outstanding image. But looking at this book, there are so many of equal power, of equal sort of intimacy with your subject. There is a shot of seals playing beneath the ocean waves with the sort of the churning of the wave above them. That is incredible. There are shots of manta rays that were breathtaking. There is a shot of sort of from the bottom of the ocean looking up past a whale shark to the shadow of the snorkelers on the surface who are looking back down at the shark, which is just extraordinary. It is a book full of the most magnificent images. I can't ask you to choose one favorite, or can I?
Well, that's like asking which one of your kids is your favorite. Yeah. Hey, in many ways, it's a tough. Look, I, you know, I culled this selection down from probably over more than a million images taken in the last 15, 20 years. So, you know, what you see in the book was already a labor of hardship and heartache of deciding what to leave out. So I think what you see are the images, you know, that for me at least have, you know, they've stood the test of time. And for me, most critically, is that each of these images tell a story. Each of these images tells a story and kind of triggers a memory in terms of how I shot it and why I shot it and who I was working with. But, you know, if I had to pick one, I think, you know, in terms of local context, I think the image of the Cape fur seals, you know, surfing the waves underwater, you know, out at the island, you know, off Hout Bay. I mean, that was an image that I had seen in my head for years and years and years. And it took, you know, half a decade to pull off when I pulled it off and I was underwater. And you're literally surfing with these seals along these waves and being able to capture the playfulness and the energy and just the sheer novelty of that perspective. I mean, that it's still one of those, you know, great memories and one of those images that I think is certainly, you know, is still as relevant, you know, today as it was when I made it back then. But gee, that's a tough question. You're going to have to look at the book and make your own decisions. I think every person who looks to read the book is going to have their own favorites and their own sort of highlights. So, yeah.
Thomas, we have to leave it there due to time constraints. It's been an absolute joy chatting to you today. And this book is simply magnificent. If you are somebody who loves the ocean universe, who loves the creatures of the sea and the creatures around the sea birds also get a lot of beautiful coverage, as do the iguanas and many others. Please look out for Wild Seas by Thomas Peshuk. It's published by HPH Publishing, a hardcover, beautiful coffee table book retailing at 750 Rand. You can order them on hphpublishing.co.za and find them in all good bookstores. Many, many thanks, Thomas, for sharing some of the passion with us today. It's been a pleasure having you on the show.